Welcome to episode 16 of the Emergency Physician Advocates, Legal and Policy Issues in Emergency Medicine, the Policy Prescriptions Edition, a production of the American Academy of Emergency Medicine. AAEM is a nonprofit professional association of over 8,000 emergency physicians committed to board certification and democratic group practice. In this month's podcast, Dr. Cedric Dark, Assistant Professor of Medicine at the Emergency Medicine Residency at Baylor College of Medicine, speaks with Dr. Elena Stinson, practicing emergency physician in Boston, Massachusetts, and Dr. Jason Shapiro, Associate Professor and Chief of the Division of Informatics in the Department of Emergency Medicine at Mount Sinai Hospital. Today, they will discuss health information exchanges.
Thank you and welcome to another episode of the Policy Prescriptions Edition of Emergency Physician Advocates, Legal and Health Policy Issues in Emergency Medicine. My name is Cedric Dark, and I have with me a couple of guests. Joining me today will be Dr. Elena Stinson, who is a practicing emergency physician in Boston, Massachusetts. She's also one of our regular contributors to the Policy Prescriptions blog, which you can visit, and you'll be able to read her post regarding an article on health information exchange in emergency medicine as soon as you finish listening to our podcast today. After her, we'll have Jason Shapiro, who's the Chief of Informatics at Mount Sinai in their emergency department, will join us and talk about the practical implications of health information exchange. All right, Dr. Stinson, thanks for joining us and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm going to basically just go over the article that I summed up on the website. The title of the article is, Does Health Information Exchange Reduce Redundant Imaging? Evidence from the Emergency Department. The study basically explored the impact of health information exchange on reducing repeat care, and specifically in this article, radiology imaging, and specifically the emergency department. Just a little bit of background. Health information exchange is the core of the Health Information Technology for Economics and Clinical Health Act, also known as the HITECH Act, passed in 2009. The HITECH Act was implemented in order to improve the flow of medical information electronically from provider to provider. This would allow for better coordination of care, better quality of care, and improved safety of care provided to patients. And this is specifically important for patients with chronic illnesses who see multiple providers across various healthcare delivery systems, who may or may not be affiliated. And ultimately, the HITECH Act, which leads to improved health information exchange, would ultimately lead to more efficiencies within the healthcare system and also provide for avenue for cost savings within our healthcare system. So this study specifically focused on emergency departments within two states, California and Florida, and collected data from three major databases within the years of 2007 and 2010. This essentially was a retrospective analysis using regression with ED fix effects and trends. The databases that were used allow for pairing of visits of patients that visited emergency departments and received radiological imaging. The imaging was then tracked and paired with other visits that patients may have had within another ED that may or may not have been within a facility that adopted health information exchange systems. This information was then taken and allowed for the researchers to extrapolate whether or not the health information exchange system actually reduced the number of radiological images that were done. So the patient, if they visited a department within 30 days for a similar ailment and had an imaging done on the same body region, they were then considered a repeat image. And the emergency departments were specifically evaluated and studied due to the time sensitivity nature of the care that's provided in those environments. And also radiological images were used as a form of repeat care that was studied, as it is one of the most common types of data exchanges that goes on within health information exchange currently. Also, studying radiology reports is also essential, as there is much controversy out regarding overexposing to radiation in patients who come in and receive these type of therapies.
Dr. Stinson, just interrupt for a second and summarize for the listeners. So it sounds like we have a study and we're looking at hospitals that have health information exchange implemented and hospitals that don't have health information exchange implemented, and comparing when people come back to the ER within a month, whether or not they get repeat CAT scans, ultrasounds, or chest x-rays.
Correct. And those are the three radiology modalities that were actually being studied, were the CAT scans, chest x-rays, and the ultrasounds. And like you mentioned, they were comparing institutions that had health information exchange system versus those that did not. So this study did demonstrate a reduction in imaging in facilities that were utilizers of the health information exchange systems. There was shown to be a reduction in CAT scans by 8.7%, a reduction in ultrasounds by 9.1%, and a reduction in chest x-rays by 13%. An interesting finding in the study, however, was that they showed that repeat tests were more likely to occur in larger emergency departments. And this shows that there's a lot that still needs to be evaluated in how we utilize this health information exchange data and systems. And we need to better understand the conditions in which we're using it to reduce overutilization. And more specifically, in these larger EDs, we have to be aware that they usually have easier access to technology and may contribute to some of the overutilization of these studies, and also the intensity of the environment. And oftentimes in EDs where there's greater stress on staff to see more patients, they tend to overutilize care.
So did I hear you right that the larger EDs wound up having more imaging or less imaging?
More.
More, okay.
The other thing that was realized within this paper is that utilization costs. The cost of the images that are being avoided may also result in significant amount of healthcare savings within our healthcare system. The data that was collected from the databases extrapolated the amount of money that could have been saved from reducing images on a state level and extrapolating it to a national annual savings amount of approximately $19 million annually. And the study is also important for policymakers, as it also substantiates their reasons for implementing health information exchange and its purposes for reducing inefficiencies and also cost savings. This may also provide some incentive for smaller facilities and providers to buy into the health information exchange system, as they're oftentimes reluctant, as they are unable to realize the importance or how they will be able to benefit their patient base or their practice if they are to buy into the health information exchange systems. So with the cost savings that are shown in this study may provide some incentive for these smaller groups, smaller practices, to realize the meaningful use of the system.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Dr. Stinson, for explaining the Lammers article to us. Again, if you're listening to the podcast, you can read the full review we have up at the Policy Prescriptions site. We'll put a link out there for you so that you can check it out. The study came out in the journal Medical Care 2014, a couple months ago, so it's pretty timely. One quick question before we let you go. Do you have an HIE where you're practicing in Boston?
I do, actually. I work within a multi-hospital system, and we do have health information exchange within our system. So it is pretty efficient. We're able to see patient records at other facilities with, again, like I mentioned, within our system, but we're unable to see the medical records or radiology reports from other facilities and other systems. So, I mean, if the patient stays within our system, it is pretty efficient. I think there needs to be more efforts to expand this across healthcare systems so that information can be passed more easily.
Okay, and I think this is, and we'll get into this a little bit more with Dr. Shapiro in a minute, but I guess this is sort of what dictates the main difference between HIE, the Health Information Exchange, and EMR, which we've talked about on this podcast before, which is more of the electronic medical record within the one system. So we'll see how those things fare out when we bring on our next guest. Thanks, Dr. Stinson.
Thanks
for joining us, and we'll bring Dr. Shapiro on right now. All right. Well, I'd like to welcome Jason Shapiro. He's associate professor and the chief of the Division of Informatics at Mount Sinai in the emergency department there. Dr. Shapiro, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
All right. Well, a few months ago, we actually reviewed a few articles talking about electronic medical records for our podcast. So I think a lot of our listeners are familiar with what EMRs are, but can you kind of describe in your words, in your opinion, how an EMR differs from a health information exchange?
Sure. A health information exchange is really a network of disparate or non-affiliated provider organizations, and they may use different electronic medical records but aren't really geared to talk to one another. And health information exchanges have generally been created at the regional level or at the state level, and this allows providers in a given region to share clinical information regarding patients who inevitably wind up going, to different provider organizations across a given community or area. And they're really basically just large data sharing networks. There's different types of technical platforms that might be implemented, but in general, what I like to call the primary clinical use case for these health information exchanges, it allows a doctor that's caring for a patient to pull up data for that patient from other organizations that the patient may have visited. And it allows them to provide hopefully more efficient, higher quality care with less redundant testing.
All right, what kind of information is available in most of these exchanges?
Usually, at a minimum, the encounter information, so you can see where the patient's been and when they've been there. But often there's additional clinical data on top of that. The exchange that I work with, which is based mainly in the New York metropolitan area, has at minimum from all hospitals laboratory data and radiology reports. Other exchanges may have a different distribution of clinical information. Often inpatient hospital discharge summaries are available, or summaries of the ED encounter may be available. Medication lists, depending on what data sources are available to the exchange, and other types of testing or clinical notes.
Okay, and we looked at a study recently talking about the role of health information exchanges in reducing redundant imaging in emergency departments, and they looked at CAT scans, ultrasounds, chest x-rays, those common tests that we perform. And they found that if you looked at the amount of repeat imaging done in, let's say, a 30-day period on a patient's second visit, the presence of a health information exchange reduced the use of CAT scans of the same body part by about 59%, ultrasounds by maybe 44%, and chest x-ray by about 67%. Is that something that you've seen in the HIE that you all have in New York City?
Yes, we definitely have. We haven't done the sort of quantitative analysis of imaging studies that was performed here, but from an anecdotal standpoint, we have published some qualitative studies based on interviews with providers. Decreasing duplicate imaging is one of the major areas that is believed to be a source of benefit from these health information exchanges in terms of reducing resource utilization and costs. And, certainly in the case of studies that require ionizing radiation like CAT scans, if you can decrease unnecessary duplicate studies, because there are forms of duplicate studies that, of course, are clinically necessary, but if you can reduce the ones that are potentially avoidable by providing data from other facilities, then that's a definite potential benefit.
Excellent. And now you had talked about, I guess, the New York City. Obviously, it's New York City. It's huge. Every hospital there. How many hospitals are in New York in the first place?
Well, it depends on how you define New York, the metropolitan area. Our exchange, which covers mostly Manhattan, Brooklyn, and out into Long Island, so it's actually outside of the city, has a little over 50 hospitals currently.
Okay. When we're looking at HIE in general, if you're trying to replicate this in other places, it's not necessarily something that you can do on a citywide level unless you're in a major metropolitan area like New York, maybe L.A., Houston, Chicago, places like that. And you're talking about a lot of these being regional. How big does the region need to be? Is there like a minimum amount of hospitals that need to be involved, minimum amount of providers that need to be involved to make these things functional?
I don't think there's an absolute minimum. There's definitely, I think, a minimal proportion in any given region. There are some rural areas and smaller areas that have implemented health information exchange. As long as there are non-affiliated provider organizations or other organizations within the healthcare space that utilize or create health information for patients, a health information exchange really allows the data to flow and follow the patients wherever they happen to go and can improve efficiency. Even if there's just, say, two hospitals in an area, if they don't If they're not affiliated and they don't have a common electronic medical record platform that allows the clinicians to access data from the other site, a health information exchange tool could be implemented to allow that to happen. I do think that there is, you know, what I like to call critical mass. If you're in a given region, having a critical mass in terms of the proportion of patients or covered lives, to use the insurance industry parlance, a critical mass of providers and a critical mass of the data is really important to create a health information exchange that's going to provide the most benefit and potentially find ways of becoming financially sustainable, you know, through the various services that could then be provided through them.
Okay, and you mentioned the health insurance industry and making sure that these exchanges are financially stable. Who actually pays for them to happen right now? Do you have a user fee for the hospitals that are participating? How does that work out?
Well, there's various business models in place in different areas. And in general, there's been federal funding that's flowed to most states at this point for a state-level health information exchange. And that was put in tech through the high-tech portion of the Recovery Act and is administered by the states. There's also, at least in New York State, there was substantial state-level funding that came into play about 10 years ago and helped fund the initial infrastructure implementation. In a lot of areas, there is a subscription fee. We had a subscription fee in New York that was levied to the provider organizations that participated. And, you know, for the most part, it was enough to keep the health information exchange operational. And, you know, for larger provider organizations, I think it was a relatively nominal fee on an annual basis. Just recently, though, there was legislation in New York that allowed state funding to come into play to continue supporting the health information exchanges in the New York eHealth Collaborative, which is a private-public partnership that drives policy and administers funds in New York. So I believe the subscription fee is now going to end in New York.
This is one of the things that the article that we talked about brought up. When you look at how these things are financed, you know, like you're saying, a lot of them are subscription fees on the user's part or on the clinician's part or the hospital system that's joined in. But it seems that some of the financial benefits from these actually are going to accrue to the payers for healthcare, because if we're reducing testing, then not only are we reducing the amount of direct costs that the health insurance industry has to pay or reimburse us for, but also if we're reducing, you know, our extent of diagnostic testing in the emergency departments, then our billing might actually decrease as well. So has there been a talk amongst the, you know, the informatics community about shifting the financial coverage of these systems from more the provider end to more the payer spectrum?
Yeah, and there definitely has. And this idea of the benefit of health information exchange accruing to the payers is one that's been talked about for quite some time now. It really depends on the market in the area where the health information exchange is being implemented. In areas where there are only a small number of dominant provider or payer organizations, there has been substantial involvement of payers in some cases, especially if there's a dominant commercial payer, because the benefit to them is more evident. In markets where it's more fragmented, it's difficult to get any given payer to sort of put skin in the game in terms of investing real dollars, you know, if they only have 10% or 15% of the market, because then it becomes a bit of a horse race in terms of putting money in. The benefits then, you know, accrue to their competition potentially, and they don't have a large percentage of the market. So it's been a bit complicated from that standpoint. And in terms of it affecting billing, you know, that's a real concern in places where even though the testing might be redundant or the admission potentially avoidable, if the provider organization is getting reimbursed for that, then it could certainly affect the provider organization's billing and revenue. You know, I think with payment reform, however, that is shifting. Provider organizations are getting involved with taking on risk through reimbursement reform models like accountable care organizations and health homes, and trying to reduce these sorts of potentially avoidable admissions or duplicate testing. Potentially avoidable duplicate testing becomes a financial benefit to the provider organizations in those instances. So I think that is going to change over time.
Okay. And if you're, you know, a physician working somewhere in New York City, how do you find out about the existence of these HIE or the HIEs that you have there? Is it something that's just, you know, when you sign for your medical privileges at the hospital, they go ahead and tell you, hey, we have this, start using it? Or is it something that's harder for the individual physician to find out about?
You know, it's a fairly heterogeneous playing field, I think, in terms of access. And I don't think we've necessarily done a great job of it in our region. I think it's probably different in different regions with different HIEs. But, you know, some of the hospital organizations in our exchange have it implemented institution-wide. Some have it just being piloted in the ED at our institution. We've had it available in our ED directly from our EHR screen with one click for a long time now. But there's a number of hospitals that on paper participate in the HIE but don't have any clinicians right now with access, which is something that I actually found very interesting in this article. I think this article, you know, it really is an important study that starts to define sort of the rough edges around the potential benefits of health information exchange and using large data to try and show empirical evidence for its benefit, in this case for reducing potentially avoidable imaging studies. You know, however, the way that they determined which sites were in their inclusion group, sites that are participating in HIE, was based at the level of the hospital. And I know at least in our own health information exchange, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's clinicians actually using the data. I think there's a lot of further study that needs to be done in terms of, you know, usage and adoption at the level of the clinical provider. And that's not something that they had the capability of doing using the large data sets in this study. And also in terms of looking at workflow integration, you know, it's really a matter of getting the right information to the right person at the right time. And there are potential technical enhancements that could be put into place in a lot of health information exchanges to get that information to the right person at the right time.
All right, excellent. And one of the last questions I want to ask about, it's not necessarily health information exchange, but kind of an offshoot of it. A lot of states have started having these prescription drug monitoring services specifically focused on opioid prescriptions because a lot of legislatures are worried that people are getting narcotic medications from the emergency departments and maybe using those inappropriately. Have you seen any interaction in terms of the information exchange that you have, or does New York have something separate where they're monitoring prescription drugs?
New York has something separate that was set up by the New York State Department of Health, which also, you know, separately spurred a lot of the development in health information exchanges. But it's really a separately held database. It allows providers, licensed providers who get credentialed to use the system to log in and look up the prescription history of individual patients. And it's actually been mandated now, called iStop in New York, that providers do an iStop and actually look up the prescription history before prescribing controlled substances. It is not information that's directly available through the health information exchange, and I would certainly like to see integration of those two data sources under one platform. And I think, you know, further integration of you know, those two separate sorts of uses of health information exchange, something that I would like to certainly see happen. And I think there's other data sources that could be pulled in also. So it becomes more of a one-stop shopping for the clinician. I don't think most clinicians, you know, want to necessarily know every data source that's coming in. I think having one platform where you can look for external data on your patient, the patient that's in front of you, and see data, whether it's coming from a state narcotics database or from another provider organization, is really key from a workflow integration standpoint.
Is the iStop program mandatory before prescribing prescriptions in New York?
It is. I don't recall the exact details about it, but I know that New York ASAP actually lobbied to get an exemption for emergency providers. I think it's as long as you're prescribing less than 5 days worth of controlled substance, you don't have to use iStop. It's a great system, but it's very cumbersome and requires a separate login through a state database and a lookup, which is what a lot of health information exchanges also require through a clinical portal, a web-based clinical portal, and that sort of cumbersome requirements to step outside of your normal workflow during a busy clinical shift, you know, significantly decreases the likelihood that a clinician's going to use the system. But they did mandate it, so a lot of people are now using it. It had been available for years and was not used very widely. I've been using it for a long time, but it was an interruption from the normal workflow to use it.
All right, so it sounds like the next phase and the next challenge for HIE in places there where it already exists is trying to get it organized into the workflow to make sure that it's a smooth transition. And then for the places, obviously, that don't have it is to get it, get these things to begin and get the financial back to implement them in the first place. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, and I think there are going to be increasing federal financial incentives and disincentives through the Meaningful Use of Electronic Health Records program for increased use of health information exchanges by both provider organizations, eligible providers, as they call them, which are mainly providers and ambulatory practices. So I think, you know, that sort of carrot and stick is going to likely increase adoption and hopefully further development of these health information exchanges.
All right. Well, Dr. Shapiro, thank you very much for joining us today on the podcast. This has been very educational for myself and certainly for our listeners as well. I'd like to thank you and have a great day. Have a good shift. I know you're about to go to work.
Yeah, heading in soon. It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. It was a great conversation.
We hope you've enjoyed this podcast from the American Academy of Emergency Medicine. For more information about AAEM and to access the resources mentioned, please visit our website, www.aaem.org. While you're there, be sure to check out the AAEM blog, part of AAEM Connect, where you can leave comments and engage in a conversation around the issues discussed in this podcast. Join us again next month. AAEM past president Dr. Larry Weiss will cover another topic of importance for emergency physicians.